even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Coming up on DTNS, will the chip shortage kill Apple's momentum? How Spotify's tech slip-up undermined an otherwise stellar quarter, and the newest YouTube stars don't have human bodies. This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, July 28th, 2021 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
In Salt Lake City, I'm Scott Johnson.
And I'm Roger Chang, the show's producer.
We were just troubleshooting Scott's Skype connection, which mysteriously disappeared and then came back. And now we're doing the show. Get the wider conversation, troubleshooting, and a lot of talk about rats on Good Day Internet. Become a member at patreon.com/DTNS. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Snap is adding a new popular feature to its map to suggest popular places that it thinks you might want to visit based on your and also your friends' past behaviors. Snap Map users will also see things like bars or restaurants they've tagged in past posts or just favorited to come back to later.
It's been a big 24 hours for quarterly earnings reports. It's that time of the 3 months. Let's start with Alphabet, which beat analyst earnings and ad revenue estimates in Q2. Revenue up 62% on the year to $61.9 billion. YouTube ad revenue increased 84% on the year with 2 billion monthly viewers. And YouTube TV saw monthly U.S. viewers up 20% on the year to 120 million. Google Cloud reported $4.6 billion in revenue, its third straight quarterly increase since Alphabet started breaking out the business.
Over in Microsoft's corner, the company beat analyst estimates on earnings and revenue in its Q4, with revenue up 21% to $46.15 billion. Intelligent Cloud revenue increased 30% to $17.38 billion. With Azure revenue in that unit up 51%. Teams now has over 250 million monthly active users, and more personal computing revenue increased 9% to $14.09 billion. However, Surface sales decreased 20% due to supply challenges.
Canada's Shopify nailed its Q2 earnings. The up-and-coming challenger to Amazon Retail saw revenues rise 57% year-over-year. Merchant services rose 52%, and subscription products rose 70%. And it makes money. That's right, a growing tech company that's already profitable. Adjusted net income more than doubled over a year ago at $284.6 million. Analysts expected earnings per share of 97 cents. They got $2.24. But you may say, Shopify doesn't have AWS. Amazon has the smarts to turn its technology into profitable businesses of their own. Well, Walmart says, hold my hard seltzer. Walmart announced it will integrate its online and in-store fulfillment technology into Adobe Commerce Platform, as well as Magneto open source, for other retailers to use. They'll also integrate Walmart Marketplace as well, in case you want to sell your stuff on Walmart.com. Retailers who use Adobe Commerce will be able to show store pickup options, communicate with customers about pickup orders, and handle selection and substitutions by employees. Oh, and friend of the show, Brett Rounceville, asked us to mention that Keep Oakland Alive, the local shopping startup we talked to him about that he helped get off the ground, has become called Nearby and just launched in Austin. So you can try it out in Austin now. Best wishes to Brett and company.
Very cool. So you might recall that ZTE released the Axon 25G last year. It was significant because it was the first under-the-screen front-facing camera phone. The company announced the update, the Axon 30, which now doubles the pixel density in the transparent area over the camera with a more seamless integration, and also claims improved performance on the generally subpar results from the Axon 20. People said, great idea, didn't work that well. Well, maybe it'll work a little bit better. We got the Axon 30 now. The phone comes out on August 3rd in China, starting at 2,198 yuan, or about 338 U.S. dollars.
Now, there, I'm estimating about seven of you out there going, you talked about Shopify earnings and not Apple. Ugh, your bias is showing. Well, we saved all of this for Apple right now. Apple had its usual glowing earnings report, a 36% rise in revenue overall year over year. iPhone sales increased 49.8% from $26 billion to $39.5 billion. It remains the cash cow for Apple. And services, which Apple sees as its future cash cow, rose 33% from $13.1 billion to $17.5 billion. Steady march up for services. Other products, which includes wearables like watches, AirPods, was up 40% to $8.76 billion. China even looked good again, with a 50% increase in revenue on the year. But Apple's earnings call cautioned that supply constraints would affect its iPhone lineup this quarter. So it's not all rosy going forward. The iPhone is still the engine of Apple's revenue, and Apple warned that revenue growth would slow next quarter because they won't be able to make enough iPhones, maybe. Apple and Cook in particular are excellent at managing supply chains, but some suspect Apple was only able to keep the iPhones coming in the previous quarter by eating into stockpiles meant for future quarters. Apple's extra cautious on these things. Last quarter, Apple warned that supply problems could reduce iPad and Mac revenue by $3 to $4 billion. And in this earnings report, Apple said the effect was limited to just iPads, and it was less than $3 billion. In fact, Mac and iPad sales broke quarterly records, with Mac revenue up 16% and iPad revenue up 12% year over year. Now, Cook says the constraints are not on the new stuff. It's not on the 5G chips, the modems, stuff like that. It's on the legacy nodes, the production parts that have been in production for a while. So that's what you need to pay attention to if you're really trying to follow this story closely. However, the Wall Street Journal said other component suppliers for Apple have reported orders in line with or stronger than previous years. That implies Apple thinks it'll be able to get the chips it needs to assemble all those components into a whole product. So even though they're warning investors that they might not be able to, they're telling they're ordering the components as if they will.
I mean, this is Tim Cook. It's supposed to be his bread and butter, right? This
is the guy that, if anybody can solve it, right?
Yeah, yeah. If anybody can do it, he can, because he's the guy that took, you know, logistics at Apple, took it to the next level, and basically set himself up to be eventual CEO of the company, and rightly so, probably. But even they have to be cautious about this. They can't control everything. They can't bust in line either and push everybody out of the way. I mean, they kind of do that a little bit.
Actually, they do that.
Just right. Yeah, for being so dominant. But they can't entirely do that. You know what I mean? Like, they can't just do that. So I'm not surprised to hear this, except what would surprise me is that it would either be as bad as either they or analysts say, because I think they planned for this. Like you alluded to earlier, they have to, you know, sort of throw it out there that, yeah, we expect some delays. We're not exactly sure this and that and the other. And then they beat the expectations a little bit. It's a little like, you know, ship or tell them you're going to ship late, but then ship early. It's a little bit like that. Yep. So I have a feeling.
Promise, over deliver, that kind of stuff. They haven't done a forecast in more than a year because they keep saying pandemic choppiness. We don't know what's going to happen. That's how cautious they are.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, the iPhone sales over the last quarter, wow. I mean, Apple is, that is your cash cow, Apple. Obviously, services has seen a rise as well, and it'll continue to shift. What, you know, I think that I may be echoing a lot of other people's sentiments where it's like, okay, so Apple's really great at the supply chain. Tim Cook, now running the company, is this his niche, right? This is what he's good at. This is why he has taken the company so far while he's been, you know, at the helm. But lots of other companies do the same thing and have really, really smart people running the show. And why has Apple, you know, somehow eluded this whole supply chain issue up until now? And I think the answer is it won't forever. You can only do so much, you know, behind the scenes trying to, you know, stack the blocks to make sure that this doesn't happen to you. But supply chain is supply chain.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
at a certain point,
Apple has some like secret underground bunker where they're making stuff that no one else knows about. And that's not happening.
At a certain point, there just aren't any components. And it doesn't matter how magical Tim Cook's skills at supply chain management are. If you can't get them, You can't right. build the phones. And I think that's what he's implying is these older nodes, we don't know when the supply constriction is going to happen. I'm guessing they're right. The analysts are right who are guessing they've eaten into their stockpiles. And they're like, well, unless we come up with an idea, we're not going to be able to make enough iPhones. We should warn analysts about that. Hopefully we'll figure it out or supplies will loosen up or something like that.
Well, speaking of niches, let's talk about the music niche. Spotify listeners rose 22% to million users in quarter two. And that might not, you know, sound too bad. Sounds not shabby at all, but it's less than everyone. This is including Spotify's, what they expected. So nobody thought that they hit what they were supposed to hit. Spotify noted that with fewer people on the go because of lockdowns, that might have something to do with it. Fewer people may be willing to pay for music and podcasts. And that was an expected effect. There was also this technical reason that they didn't sign up as many people. They didn't see it coming. At one point, Spotify made a change that stopped signups from being properly verified through one of its partners that handled email verifications. By the time Spotify noticed the problem and fixed it, it had failed to verify between 1 and 2 million accounts. That is not nothing. That's a lot of people. The good news is, though, paying listeners, which Spotify makes more money off of anyway, rose 20% to 165 million, which is, was to be expected. The amount of time people listen is on the rise as well, with Spotify saying it's nearly pre-pandemic levels is where they're at. Spotify noted that its podcast listening rose 30% year over year, with total hours consumed reaching an all-time high, up 95%. It's bringing in a bunch of money with podcast ad and revenue up almost a meaningless 627%, which beat expectations. We'll talk about why that number seems small to some and huge to others. But anyway, Spotify's revised its year-end forecast down from 402 to 422 million active listeners to a paltry 400 to 407 million active listeners.
Which implies that 422 was maybe a little inflated, and the 400 to 407 is probably more in line. But man, this is a great earnings report if Spotify hadn't had that glitch, right? It's still not deadly. It's not like it killed Spotify's quarter. They're making money off the paying listeners, and that went up 20%. It's overall good news, but they must be looking at that going, why did that happen? Why did we let that happen? Because that happens and you lose a few thousand, you're upset. You lose 1 to 2 million, that impacts your bottom line.
I mean, the good news is that, sure, if there was something that it went wrong behind the scenes, the company isn't going to make the same mistake in the next quarter. So it'll rectify itself. I remain so, I was about to say impressed. I don't think impressed is the right word, but so interested in the idea that podcast/audio consumption companies have taken such a hit from the pandemic. And the idea is that people aren't moving around as much. So people don't like this kind of content because people like this kind of content when they're going from point A to point B. Gaming companies, video content companies have not had the same issue. It's the audio companies that have taken a hit, and the same audio companies who are saying, okay, life's coming back to normal. We're things are okay again, because it is really about someone's routine and where they can fit in something as they're doing something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
Stuff that you can park your butt on the couch and do, weather the pandemic better than stuff that leaves your eyes free to get bored and want to do something else. If you're not driving or biking or walking the dog that just makes sense, right?
You might see the switch back. Just last Wednesday, we were talking about how Netflix, their earnings and their expectations were tempered a little bit by people going out again.
Yeah.
Maybe
and
flips,
Spotify
right?
is saying like, yeah. we're starting to,
yeah, it's
starting to loosen
opposite.
Up. Yeah. We're mm-hmm. starting to get better because of that. So you're right. It depends on how you look at it. I think it's also interesting that they're making all this money off podcasting. Spotify mm-hmm. has made a big bet on podcasting. A lot of people have been skeptical of whether it would pay off for them. It's still too early to say for sure it paid off. But like you said, 627% when you're coming from almost nothing is somewhat meaningless, Scott. You're not wrong there. But they are bringing it to an all-time high. They are continuing to skyrocket. And that's what you need to see at the beginning of the hockey stick, right? You need to see it skyrocketing like that. And I think it means that, you know, Spotify, with all of its acquisitions, it continues to make them, bringing in technology, so far is working. There's still a question of whether it can keep the momentum up, but so far it's working.
I think it should be encouraging to content creators of all types, us included, to see that and see that that went well. Because that usually is a temperature of what's sort of happening everywhere in theory. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, we all have our personal Joe Rogans to bear. I don't know what that means.
Well, that means Spotify is like, oh, we will bear him happily as long as that money keeps pouring in. We're absolutely fine with that. All right. We're also absolutely fine. In fact, more than fine with Dan Campos, the host of NTX. And he has a message for you.
Did you know that until 2009 in South Africa, carrier pigeons with USB drives were a faster way to deliver information than using the internet? The best way that you can get your weekly tech news faster is by listening to Noticias de Tecnología Express. It's a bird. It's a plane. Es Noticias de Tecnología Express.
Hi, this is Matt.
And Sean.
From Two Black Guys.
With good credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen.
All right. On August 31st, back in 2007, rather, Hitsune Miko debuted. You remember her? She was a Vocaloid, or a software-created pop star. Miko used Yamaha's Vocaloid 2, 3, and 4 singing synthesizing technologies. She's performed live on stage thanks to Rearcast Production. Wow, right? Kind of old-fashioned now. With free downloadable software at Live2D Cubism, there are others, but this is a popular one, anybody with a decent avatar illustration know-how can become a VTuber for just less than $100. That is right, a virtual YouTuber, VTuber. They can go live, they can appear in each other's streams, they can chat with the audience in real time. It's like people, but they're not people. In fact, with YouTube's Super Chat, where people pay to have their comments highlighted and then pinned to the top of live chats during streams, increasing the chance that they'll directly interact with the stream host, a VTuber can make a decent amount of money. restofworld.org has a really good article about how the pandemic has fueled the rise of the VTuber. Definitely existed before, big in Japanese culture, but starting to catch on elsewhere. Kitsuna AI launched in 2016 and is considered the first genuine VTuber, an entirely digital YouTube celebrity. She's rumored to be voiced by Nozomi Kasuga, created by production company Activate. And Kitsuna AI has done live concerts on YouTube, TikTok, Bilbil, Oculus, performed on stage in real life with a human band at Zepp Haneda Music Hall in Tokyo back in June. So it's not unlike having a favorite animated character that has a storyline and never ages. But Kitsuna AI is interactive and live, talking to you if you want her to. In August of last year, Playboard reported 7 of the top 10 Super Chat earners. Again, that's where people are earning money on YouTube, were VTubers. Kiria Coco led with $100,000 in a single week. By October, VTubers' views grew to more than 1.5 billion per month, and it's estimated that the number of VTuber performers now exceeds 10,000. The corporate world also taking notice, as they do. In April, Netflix debuted a half-sheep, half-human female VTuber named Enkome Kurano to personally and directly be a part of the anime fan community. In June, also to celebrate the 30th anniversary of Sonic the Hedgehog, Sega had a Sonic appear as a VTuber. Also in June, Guar Gura became the most popular VTuber in the world, beating Kitsuna AI's subscriber count by surpassing the 3 million mark. She often streams while playing games. That is what you might be familiar with, just like a popular streaming human would. So there's a big human component to all of this. And that part is really important. You just aren't supposed to know or care who that human is behind the scenes, even though you're hearing their voice or somebody's voice. Back in July, Sony Japan also opened auditions for what it calls the largest virtual talent development and management project in history, with plans to debut 50 VTuber talents.
So this makes sense in Japan. If you follow the idol culture there, I think I'm going to get the name wrong, AKB48, something like that, has been an idol group that's got dozens and dozens of members, and they keep rotating through them. And so the members aren't what's important at any given point. It's the membership, and you're a fan of that. So it's a culture that leans into VTuber, where you're like, oh, I want to idolize somebody, but man, isn't it cool if they can talk back to me? It's not just as one way. If I can pay for Super Chat and get them to respond directly to my chats, and then it's virtual, so that person is shielded, because the other side of idol culture is the dark side of stalking and people trying to figure out where they live and whether they're dating someone. Whereas if it's virtual, there's a real human behind the voice, but that kind of melts away because you're looking at the animated version. And so there's right. less of a temptation to go find them, because you're like, well, that person I'm looking at, that Kiryu Coco, is not real.
You know, it's interesting. So I fiddled around with this a little bit because I wanted to see what I could do on Twitch. And I don't remember the utility I used. It was a web-based thing that basically let me be a selection of, I don't know, 10 sort of anime-looking characters. And it all was very weird and actually kind of impressive, because the camera would recognize my movements and facial expressions and would translate those on screen. And really, this is all kind of an outpouring of that. And people have really glommed onto it. I've had people say, Scott, the problem with that is that you could have some, 54-year-old dude who's pretending to be a young girl and is like attracting a giant audience of fellow young girls or whatever. And it's all a little weird, don't you think? And my answer to that was, I don't really know what to make of this yet. Like, in some ways, I understand the intrigue of it. It's a way for you to truly be an avatar or be, I don't know, it's like cosplay or anything else. You get to kind of be somebody else while you're online. And that has all kinds of connotations, positive and negative. But it is fascinating. Like, it's a really fascinating new way that people are communicating with their fan base. And it's obviously here to stay. There's enough money involved now and enough popularity involved. This isn't going to go anywhere. So I find it kind of fascinating.
Kind of to Tom's point, and, again, I agree with you, Scott. We're kind of a little bit of a wait and see issue here. But, you know, for someone to be like, I like idol culture, I want to kind of be obsessive about this, I want to tune into everything, and this is actually maybe less problematic than this happening with a real person. Now, you know, if somebody wants to be problematic, they're going to do it anyway. But there is something I think that feels like it's less of that you're, you know, going too far, being a little too creepy, barrier to entry type of thing, when you just kind of want to focus on something and put a lot of time into it.
And if you want that fantasy, it might feel a little less creepy if there's not a human on the other end, even though, again, there's a human voicing it. But you can pretend like, well, it's not too weird for me to talk to this animated character because it's just an animated character. Right. That can, you could see that as a negative, but I could see a lot of people seeing that as a positive of like, that's harmless. Right. Because it's a fictional person anyway. But I get to interact.
Yeah,
I listen. I'm pretty new to this whole VTuber thing. As of today, so I was watching a bunch of stuff earlier. You know, in preparation for this conversation, and Gwargura, who's now the most popular VTuber, at least for now. You know, based on people tuning into live streams, and I mean, there is a voice that you're like, oh wow, it sounds like a kid. Might not be a kid. Might just, you know, be a voice actor
probably
of some kind.
Probably not a
kid.
Yeah,
you know, but I get why this is pleasant. It's fun. You know, it's like, oh, look, I'm trying to park a car in this game that I'm playing. I don't know the name of the game. But, you know, that kind of stuff. And you know, I even found myself being like, no, this feels safe and kind of fun. And whoever's behind the scenes, keep doing what you're doing. And I see why so many people find it entertaining.
Comforting, entertaining.
Yeah.
All of those.
And certainly characterization and performance and that sort of thing is already part of streaming and YouTube culture. There are people who put on a mustache and a funny pair of glasses and that's their YouTube personality. And if you met them in real life, you'd hardly recognize them. This is just another step in that direction.
It is,
I think,
a bit of a virtual costume. In fact, shout out to Snowshoe in the Diamond Club community, who was basically doing this before it was called VTubing. I've been doing it for years. So thank you, Nick with a C, for reminding me of that.
Nice. You were a pioneer. Let's move on to Sony. They also had a report of sorts. Sony reported it surpassed 10 million PS5 units sold on July 18th, about a month earlier in its release cycle than the PlayStation 4, making it Sony's fastest selling console, straight up. Which surprised me. I thought the PS2 was never going to get dethroned in that regard. But Sony Interactive CEO Jim Ryan said that improving inventory levels for the console remains a top priority. And you're hearing a lot of news about stores getting restocks here soon. Not unrelated, Microsoft's reporting similar kinds of effects. They have now the fastest selling Xbox in the history of that company. They sold less units overall, almost 7 million, but have had similar stock issues. So, Tom, what this turns out to look like is, there's two problems happening, or two things happening. One is demand is very high, and it's also hard to get new stock into the pipeline because of shortages and whatever. And they're both happening at the same time. In other words, it's not just shortages.
Yeah.
It's real demand.
I know that everybody listening is like, who are these 10 million people? How are they getting these PS5s? I cannot possibly get a PS5. That's always the way you feel when you're on the outside of a high demand item. Anytime there's high demand, usually there's a short period of time where you can't get it. And then the supply catches up. And I think you're absolutely right. The supply can't catch up. Sony didn't expect the high demand that they got, neither did Microsoft. And unlike in the past where they can call up the fab and say like, hey, we want to place 10,000 more orders, the fab is like, we have no more capacity. We can fulfill the orders we promised to you we would fulfill, but we can't increase them. And then that means that they stay in short supply on the shelves and it's harder to get them.
Yeah, I guess I'm not surprised by the success of those numbers, but this is going to be an interesting coming year. The thing we haven't even talked about here is how Nintendo was always out of Switches during this time as well. So they did extremely well. Like, the demand is ridiculously high. And then nightmare scenario is you can't build them fast enough to satisfy that demand.
There's actually not a chip shortage so much as there is an inability to meet the demand for the number of chips that they can make given capacity right now.
Yep.
And we've talked at length about why that is, but yeah, it's y'all just want too many PS5s and Xboxes. That's the problem. Stop wanting them. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, Scott, you mentioned Xbox. So I thought that the story, might, be good for your tummy. Krispy Kreme has debuted the Nexus level donut as part of a new Xbox cross promotion in the UK and Ireland. And if you buy Xbox branded donuts between August 2nd and 22nd, you have a chance at winning an Xbox Series S and also a month of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate as a new subscriber. So stand back, Destiny Toaster. Step aside, KFC bucket-shaped gaming PC. Xbox Mini Fridge, we hardly even knew you. Krispy Kreme is coming for you. But before you get too excited, a video about the feature shows actors as the team behind the donut with corporate titles like Product Innovator and Quality Assurance Guru, ha ha ha, touting its revolutionary design and ergonomic form. So this seems like it's a real donut that can be had, but you have to be in the UK. So if you are, please get one and Zoe, let us know what's inside.
Zoe, send me a donut. Get some donuts. Yeah.
They won't be a little stale, but I'll take it. Go for it. Why not?
Yeah, and these are just powdered donuts with green crosses on them.
Yeah.
They're not like...
Well, they might have jelly. We don't know.
What flavor?
We might. Someone has... Yeah, someone's got to get that donut and let us know what's inside.
Destiny-flavored jelly.
It tastes like ray tracing, if you think about it.
All right, let's check out the mailbag.
This one comes in from Nick with a K. Nick said, your discussion of cinematic VS or high FPS video, and if the love of a cinematic 24 frames per second is a generational thing, got me thinking. It's also extended to games. While every gamer likes a high FPS, there's an argument over if you should use motion blur or not. Motion blur can give a bit more cinematic presentation, even at a high frame rate, but there is, shall we say, spirited debates over if you should or should not have motion blur turned on. So it's not just video connoisseurs that fight over that cinematic look.
We now go to Scott Johnson's lawn, where he's telling someone who loves motion smoothing to get off of it. Scott.
Well, I'll tell you, I've recently got myself in a position where I can do up to 144 frames per second on a PC and a video card that can do that and do it in HDR and all the bells and whistles. And there's a reason gamers aim for higher FPS almost over any other performance metric. They just want faster frame rates. Faster frame rates in gaming means a better experience. I don't think there's anybody who's arguing that games should run at 24 frames per second. And blurring does add a cinematic quality to the game, but it doesn't actually affect your frame rate. I usually turn it off because I just kind of find it annoying to have that blur there. And I notice it a little bit too much, so I turn it off almost immediately. And it actually helps improve performance typically if you turn that off. Some games use it to hide problems like artifacting or tearing and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of stuff going on with blurring that isn't just simply a setting that you would prefer for a more cinematic look. I think as a point, however, and there is debate, spirited debate about whether blurring is a worthy addition to a game or not. But there's also spirited debate about reverse XY axis and your controls and whether when you push up it should go down or not. Like there's these eternal arguments. This is one of them. But I can tell you almost universally, gamers want better frame rates. And if you give that to them, they'll take that over anything else. So I prefer my film in the 24 frame cinematic way. My video games prefer at maximum frame rate. So I don't think the two things are tied or connected. I think they are two very different experiences. And it's possible to love one over here and seem like it's a problem over here, but it's not. It's actually the opposite over here. That makes sense.
It does.
It does. Yeah.
Does it? Good.
Yeah. No, I was expecting a more ranty Scott, and I got reasonable Scott. That all makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. There's not. I mean, to say that there's no fight, really. It's more like, do you like the blur? No. Well, I'd turn that off then if I were you.
It's like the doctor. Does it hurt when you do that? Stop doing
that. Stop doing that. Yeah.
Well, Nick, thanks for writing in and helping us have another conversation on the show. If you have thoughts on anything that we talk about on the show, questions, comments, all of it, please do send it our way. feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Thank you in advance. Also, shout out to patrons at our master and grandmaster levels, including Steve Iadarola, Dan Kolbeck, and Jeffrey Zilks. Also, an extra special thanks to Paul Davison. Paul is one of our top lifetime supporters for DTNS. Paul has been with us for some time. Thank you for all of the years of support, Paul. Couldn't have done it without you.
Yeah, well done, Paul. Paul's been with us for a while. I like it.
Yay, Paul. Also, yay, Scott. Yay, oh. Scott Johnson. I don't know. What have you been up to, man?
Well, there's a lot. so much that it's hard to describe. There's been quite a lot going on in and around the community that I podcast in. If you want to hear and catch up on a lot of that stuff, there's great places to do it. You can find it all. I think some of the best stuff I've done recently. I'm actually really proud of it over on The Instance and elsewhere. So if you are interested in anything I might have to say, go check it out. Frogpants.com/podcast, or you can find me on Twitter and poke me there. I'm at Scott Johnson.
Excellent. We are live on this year's show, Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern. That's 20:30 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. And we'll be back doing it all again tomorrow with Justin Robert Young. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.